Today, inflation? What inflation? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and prop news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And I'm joined by Steve. Hi, Steve. How are you?
Hi, Martin. Great to see you again.
It's really great to have you on the channel. First time this year. And boy, inflation, deflation. It's right in the middle of the crosshairs now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's starting to get a little bit interesting. I mean, as you know, and we've talked about this a lot on your show, is everybody's just super inflationary. But I think there's a little bit of doubt starting to show up now.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's interesting. We had the inflation numbers here yesterday, and the headline number was quite strong. But when you actually decomposed it, it was only because of government stimulus. So if you actually look to the underlying measures, there was no sign of any inflation at all. So, you know, it goes back to this fundamental point about whether, in fact, in a lower interest rate environment, even with all the quantitative easing or asset transfer, depending on your definition, whether that really is going to create any momentum for inflation. And in fact, even the Fed is now beginning to cast some doubt on it.
Yeah, today's FOMC meeting was pretty interesting because in the past, we've always heard that we're going to taper, you know, soon, it's coming. It's a lot of jawboning. And yet before they say all that, Powell will get up and say, don't worry, we're not going to change anything until we hit our newly inflated inflation target, which we seem to be miles away from, but don't worry, we think it's coming real soon. This was the first meeting that he actually downplayed when he was asked, you know, what about this or tapering and what about, you know, how are you going to wind? Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves here. And that was really interesting because he made it very clear that we're in a disinflationary environment. We've been in a disinflationary environment. He didn't say none of the stuff was working, but it was pretty clear that none of the stuff was working. It's going to be a while before we get to inflation. In fact, his biggest concern wasn't inflation because he made it very clear about that. Don't worry. Again, don't worry. If we see any kind of inflation that's above beyond what we need, I can fix that. But I can't fix this persistent disinflation. And I think that's the problem that, you know, we keep talking about is, you know, the stimulus isn't working, whether it's monetary or fiscal, you know, and even he mentioned demographics and debt and technology, all the things that, you know, I think on your show that we have said are persistent problems for deflation. And it's just interesting to finally hear him admit that a little bit as people still think that the Fed's going to unwind their balance sheet soon or stop QE. And the reality is that's not happening.
No, absolutely. Well, maybe the Fed should watch our shows, Steve, might get a few ideas, because it seems to me that actually the Federal Reserve has been basically relying on its ability to jawbone the market in the right direction, right? But now they're being confronted by some pretty worrying fundamentals. And you've just got to question whether, in fact, they know what they're doing.
Well, I think their track record shows that they don't know what they're doing. I mean, for 40 years, we've had disinflation. And, you know, it's not due to lack of them trying. It's just, you know, I believe you had Jeff Snyder on your show before. And he kind of says, look, we're taking this antiquated, you know, system and we're trying to work it in a modern world. And it doesn't work. It's very clearly it doesn't work. And yet, you know, if you or I had a business together and for 40 years we were persistently failing, at some point we would sit down and be like, you know, this probably is a bad idea. But the Fed, nope, we're going to continue trying because their only real policy tool they have now is jawboning. I mean, they know QE isn't working. I mean, it should be very obvious. We've done more QE, not just in the United States, not just in Australia, not just in Europe, I mean, not just Japan, just around the world. We have this massive burst of quantitative easing, and it's still disinflationary.
Mm. Well, it's interesting. If you count up the total US dollar value that's around, more than 20% of all US dollars are less than a year old.
Yeah, it's, and yet you can't get inflation.
Exactly.
I mean, and if you can't get inflation when you do that, what are you going to have to do to get it? Or maybe the Fed needs to realize that's just there's structural problems here that are not solved by monetary policy. You and I know that, but I don't think they do yet. Or if they do, they don't want it to be publicly known because, you know, if they came out and said, look, hey, everybody, sorry, We can't do anything about this. You want to watch the markets crash real fast? That would be a day that no one wants to remember.
Yeah. So this is about theater, and it's about confidence, and it's about not admitting that you're wrong. I mean, that seems to me the way we are. And it's interesting because there's some charts that the Reserve Bank has produced here in terms of their future expectations, for example, wages growth, right? And every year they sort of project wages growth at one level and it comes in a lot lower, right? And it's like they keep saying, well, inflation's coming back, and it never does, right? Now, at what point do you then say, hang on, look, this is more fundamental than just you getting it slightly wrong. There is a fundamental structural misunderstanding of the way the economy is actually working.
Well, that's a good point. Either all the models are wrong because they can't get it right, or there's a structural problem, or there's both, and nobody wants to admit that what we're doing doesn't work. But you know, the Fed and all these central banks are very powerful. I know they don't consider themselves political, but they're very much, you know, tied into global politics. They're very powerful, and for them to come out and say, "Hey, look, this isn't working. We don't know why it's not working. We're not sure what it will take to work." You want to talk about a power vacuum? They will lose their status overnight. Fiat currencies will lose their status. No one wants that. Now, there are certain people that do, because they're sitting here watching, well, I own a bunch of cryptocurrency. Okay, yeah, there's certain people totally are on board with that. You're not going to see that from these central banks. They cannot admit they're wrong. Or if they do, they have to wait so many years to say, well, that thing we did a decade ago, that was a really stupid idea. But at the time, we didn't know.
Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting because the St. Louis Fed also, in some of their recent discussion, also are sort of raising the same sort of questions, aren't they?
Well, yeah, I think you're referring to an article that's actually written after the great financial crisis. Now, and this is really interesting to me, Martin, because the St. Louis Fed, of all the Federal Reserve member banks, publishes a lot of interesting reports that it seems to be the FOMC board never reads, because if they read them, right? I mean, it'd be like again, we have a business and we get this report in that says, hey, you guys are doing some really bad things that are costing you a lot of money and you look like idiots. And we never read it. We pay people. Hey, will you run these reports for us? And we're like, oh, look, yeah, there they are. But have you read them? No, I've read, nope. And that's the thing is, you look at these reports, and this one back in, I think it was 2014, pretty clearly stated that quantitative easing is creating a liquidity trap. And it's almost the Fed doesn't even realize it, but they're stuck in it. In fact, there was a question about that in the presser today that, hey, are you guys stuck? And if, I was like, no way, man. We're cool. We can move all around. It's like, no, you're actually stuck in this liquidity trap. And where this comes back to is and we've talked about how everyone believes this big rise in the money supply here in the U.S. is going to somehow turn into inflation, and yet it hasn't, and it's not. I mean, we're almost a year. It was in March. We're a couple months now, or less than 2 months from that. We haven't seen inflation. We've seen disinflation, but we haven't really seen any form of inflation. And what this article points out, which is really fascinating to me, is what's happening that we can't see, is that even though the money supply is rising, there is an equal or very large demand for money. Now, that term is maybe confusing for people, so we'll just use cash. So there's a large demand for cash. Now why would that be? Like, again, this doesn't make a lot of sense, but when you think about it, is how do people handle their savings? They seek to get the highest yield they can on. So let's say I've got an emergency fund and it's gotten a little big. Well, I'm going to take some of that liquid money that I don't need now, and maybe I'm going to go park it out there for a year or two or five where I can get a higher return. I still know it's going to come back. I just want a higher return on it. Well, because of the central bank actions of quantitative easing, what it does is it causes interest rates to go down. If you and I have talked about, depending on the size and scope of QE, it either suppresses or it actually drops interest rates down. So if I, as a consumer or business, have cash that's building up, then I want to go out and get the highest yield. But if the highest yield, if I go out and say, well, I can go buy a 5-year CD for slightly more interest, I mean, slightly as in negligible, but I'm tying my money up for 5 years, why would I do that? In fact, consumers are in business are smart enough to say, I'm not going to do that. So what we can't see in the data, because the M2 doesn't show this, is even though the money supply or deposits are rising, so is the demand for cash. And when you have, as this report said, an equal demand for cash and a rising money supply, you have no inflation. Mm-hmm. Worst case, you have demands for cash that exceed the growth rate of the money supply, and there's a delta that has to occur. That means aggregate price levels have to come down, which is again why I've said, and you and I've talked about, QE is deflationary or disinflationary. It will lower the consumer price index. It's all because the Fed is now stuck in a liquidity trap created by their own need to lower interest rates to spur credit demand. But because the banks aren't lending, we get no credit demand. So here we're stuck in this liquidity trap. We can't get out. So it's very, very interesting to me.
Yeah, I think it's a very, very fundamental paper. And, you know, the insights that it casts in terms of understanding the way the economy works, I think is really, really important. The other point, of course, there is with interest rates so low, more people are just holding notes. So it's interesting that in Australia, the supply of notes has had to be increased because more people are just holding notes. You know, with rates rates on deposit so low and the risk so high, it becomes a very low risk alternative.
Well, I have another theory on that. Is if I'm behind on my bills, so let's say I haven't made my mortgage or my rent or my utilities, maybe I'm in some sort of forbearance or, you know, temporary payment reprieval, whatever you want to call it. What power does the other party have if they have my banking data? So, right, let's say I'm not paying my electric bill, for example, but I've been on direct withdrawal. Well, at some point, that electric bill is going to come due and the electric company is going to seek to get their money. Well, if they have the power to draft my bank account because I've already pre-authorized that because everything was cool before, well, maybe I don't want them taking that money. So how do I fix that? Cash. And I think there's a lot of that going on where family, I know that, I mean, you look at the some of the data coming out as how, you know, a lot of families, there's families that haven't even made payments on bills since March. Well, if you're worried about getting evicted, and I know, I don't know if this is the same in Australia, but here there was a moratorium on that that's expiring and you've got all those bills coming back. Well, if I need to feed my kids and maybe put a roof over the head at some point, the only thing I can do is stack up cash because you can't draft that.
Yeah, that's very interesting, Steve. And certainly in end of March, we've got a whole bunch of stuff falling off here. We've got our government support programs stopping at the moment, and we've got the mortgage repayment holidays stopping as well. And yeah, in my data, I am seeing this same phenomenon that some of those households who actually are under the most financial pressure are also the ones that are holding most cash. So I think you've got a really important insight here, again, as to how people are thinking, right? You know, they're actually one step ahead of where authorities think they are, I suspect.
Well, sure, because another power is if I'm your landlord or mortgage company, I could, you know, maybe put a lien or go after this stuff, and I know I'm going to lose because the banks are going to, hey, you can't touch your account. I mean, I think consumers have figured out that the banks can lock you down pretty quick now. And how do you protect against that? Because again, you might have to move. I mean, who knows what these people are going to do? And it makes perfect sense why they would want cash. I mean, if I was in that same position, I would be withdrawing max limit I could get out that I had available every day. Because, and we hear too in March, we have a lot of our government insured mortgages that start over again, unless they're going to get postponed again. I don't know. But yeah, if all these payments are going to start drafting, you don't have any money and you got kids to feed, you're going to hold on to cash any way you can.
Yeah, let's just move on then to talk briefly about the markets, because, of course, you know, the stock markets are still pretty high, or they came up slightly today. But one of the things that you've been highlighting and I've been watching is this margin lending.
Yeah, margin lending's off the chart. And by the way, in terms of, for those watching, this interview was scheduled. We did not time it today with today's stock market drop, but that was pretty interesting. Yeah, the margin debt is off the chart. In fact, it's just shocking to me when you look at where it dipped down in March, which would make sense because there was, you know, the liquidity event. And it's almost as if, you know, the good times are here and people have borrowed an excessive, I mean, well beyond the prior high now. And you see today in the markets, volatility skyrocket because no one's hedging. I mean, nobody. nobody thinks the market go down. Of course, it makes sense because we now, of course, we all believe that the Fed has this magical ability and all the central banks can keep stock prices up or keep them going up. And the fiscal stimulus is going to create all this demand. And all this is creating is just massive amounts of tinder that if we continue to see liquidity drain out of the markets like we did today, I mean, people think that we can't see a replay of March, that 30% decline. I think not only can we see a replay of it, but we can see a deeper one because of all this excessive risk taking. And it's like, you think people learn their lesson? Apparently not.
Well, and also the point I'd make is that quite a few people who put money in the markets of putting government money in the markets, right? You know, they got their check and they put it into crypto or they've put it into other stocks and they've seen significant rises over the last few weeks. It's so easy, right? Until it's not.
Yeah. In fact, if you look at small, what they call small speculators, which is largely retail investors, call option buying, record high. I mean, the chart is like, I'm going to do this backwards, but it's like, whoop. I mean, no one's ever seen this. So it's like, hey, I got this extra money, don't really need it. I'll just buy some, you know, YOLO call options on, you know, GameStop or whatever. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't matter. If it pays off, great. Well, a lot of that, you know, excessive speculation can quickly and easily get unwound. And, it wouldn't really surprise me at this point if we see a revisit or a blow through the March, you know, lows, if this continues to unwind. Now, who knows, maybe tomorrow all the dust will settle. But if we continue to see volatility pop again tomorrow and the following day, we're going to see a big move. And once again, you know, bond prices will take off, risk assets will crash and create another opportunity, unless it triggers an insolvency event, which I don't know, because of all these things still on forbearance, if it will, but it could create another big drop and another huge rally before we eventually get to what will be the last one.
Oh, it's always a bit of a roller coaster. I mean, I think volatility will remain high for quite some time. You know, the Biden stimulus will give another kick probably in the short term, but it doesn't fundamentally solve that structural issue that we've been touching on. And as we've said before, and to underscore it again, the more you throw petrol on the fire, you know, the bigger the flames get, but it doesn't necessarily solve anything. It just creates a bigger flame.
Right. And there's let's touch on the Biden thing. I mean, that's not going to happen right away, most likely. I don't think it's going to. But if you look at what's interesting, I'm one of the few people that have said that QE leads to higher volatility. And people are like, well, it's not possible. It is, because when you look at the relationship between bond prices and volatility, now they're not always tightly together. But when bond prices go up, volatility shoots up too. Well, who's driving bond prices up? Central banks, by quantitative easing, driving interest rates down and pushing bond prices up. So there's this persistent underlying push for volatility through the Fed and the commercial banks by buying bonds, and of course foreign central banks who also are buying them. So it's possible that, you know, today's move may get reversed. I don't know, but that persistent move of the Fed will still push volatility up, will still push bond prices up, will still push an unwind. And I don't think, you know, the next stimulus plan can get here fast enough. In fact, at least we're seeing in the money supply here. Last week, it looked like checks were really, you know, I think it was up over $300 billion. It's clearly stimulus checks. We didn't see the weekly retail sales data jump that much. So we already seen stimulus, and yet there's a lack of liquidity in the market. That is telling you there's real structural issues here. I mean, it's like saying, I've got this beautiful home and you can't see these cracks forming in the foundation and the ants working their way and the bugs come in. You just can't see it. But it's there.
Absolutely. And the point, of course, with that analogy is they can chew away a lot of the foundations, right? And you just don't see anything until suddenly it all falls down. And that's the point. We are going to see at some point a significant correction. But the issue is, will it be short term? Will it be longer term? Will it go up a bit, come back a bit, go up a bit? You know, that's the unknown part. And I suspect that the problem we have at the moment is that is completely unpredictable.
Well, I'll give you a prediction for fun.
Okay, good. Please do.
So I do believe there's going to be an insolvency event. And I think we both agree that there's going to be debt defaults.
Yep.
The reason we haven't seen it is because no one's being allowed hardly default right now.
Yep.
I mean, I've got a client of mine. He is an attorney who deals with bankruptcies. And he's telling me that, you know, the pipeline to get to him, there's no activity. So he's saying, look, this isn't happening yet. So if we do get a big spike in volatility, it'll be another liquidity event like March if we don't get defaults, which will create another big rebound. Then everyone will think this will be the one. But at some point, these insolvencies are going to happen. So either this triggers insolvencies and it goes real deep, or it doesn't. And we get a big rebound because the Fed will come in and other central banks and do more QE, and everyone will think, okay, we just needed more. And that'll drive everyone back into the market, only for it to happen again. It could be very interesting.
Absolutely. Well, we've had a similar switch here with almost no firms falling over because they're protected, but that's gone away now. And my view is that it's going to take a few months to work through the system, but it's definitely going to start hitting. My surveys still show that a lot of small businesses are under the pump. I also know that some of the bigger organizations are still in difficulties too. So I think we will see some liquidity issues ahead. We are in such interesting times, Steve. Always fascinating to catch up with you, and really appreciate your time today. We'll do it again soon.
Martin, my friend, I always enjoy coming on your show and talking to you, and I will certainly look forward to the next time.
Cheers. Have a great day.
You too.